Lucien Paquette, now living in Middlebear, Vermont. I was born in Crasbury, Vermont, August 14th, 1916, in the farmhouse where our entire family was born, seven children, my family. Well, it was an interesting time. I suppose it's hard to compare it with today, because at that time, we were experiencing what everybody else was experiencing. And we didn't have the technology of today. It was on our little farm where I was born. There was no electricity. We had no telephone in our home. As a matter of fact, when I went to UVM and graduated in 1940, there still was no electricity at our home. That came with the Rural Administration, Rural Electronic Administration. And I think my parents got electricity in 1942. Well, starting real early, it was kind of a fun time with brothers and sisters. But being on a little farm, we did help our dad. The girls would help mom in the house. And for fun, it was our own family, pretty much. We would have to make some of the things that we used. I remember for playing out in the wintertime on the snow, we had our homemade scooters. We'd take staves from old barrels and nail those to a piece of 2x4 and put a little board across the top of that. And that was our jumper or scooter. And skis, being in the rural country up there, Northeast Kingdom. And a little bit later on, when I was in elementary school, which was about a mile from where we lived, we walked to school in those days. As we got a little bit older, in the wintertime, we'd go to school, cross lots on our homemade skis. And our homemade skis were barrel staves. None of the kind that developed, even in the earlier years. Yeah, talking about the homemade bindings. A leather strap through the ski or nailed on the barrel staves. You just put your toes in that. And they weren't ski boots that we had, of course. They were the regular kind of winter footwear that we had. And I do remember one winter, my dad would take the what we call the belly girt off from the work harness. That's a wide strap that would go from the tugs under the horse's belly. But in the wintertime, with the horses out in the deep snow, and they'd be raising their feet high and they'd sometimes catch in that. So my dad would take those off, hang them up in the barn. I know I was one of them involved. We saw those hanging up there, nice wide leather straps. We thought, these are going to be an improvement over the narrow ones that we used to have on our skis. And when it came spring, my dad went to look for his belly girt. They were on our skis. See, born in 1916, I was raised during the Depression days and all. And this was approaching that time when those things were not too plentiful. It was so common amongst all families that we were living in a similar way with neighbors. So everyone was having a difficult time. The breadwinner, my dad with a little dairy farm, and they were small dairy farms then. I think the largest number of dairy animals he ever had was 28 to 30 cows. He did do some work out lumbering in the wintertime with his farm horses to get a little bit of extra. We knew we didn't have, at Christmas time, for instance, maybe we'd have a popcorn ball in our stocking. It was, I don't know how to explain it. We lived it. We knew it was tight. If we got a little bit of something, it was a tremendous gift. It was a tremendous surprise. In a very rural area, population, of course, is not what it is today. Farms were small, relatively close together. Eventually, my dad did get a milking machine. I don't remember what year that came. It was before he had electricity. So to run the vacuum pump, it was a gasoline engine. There was part of the time that the dairy products being sold was cream. So we did the separating of the milk on the farm. And it was a hand-turned separator. There was a lot of hand-turned things in the summertime. I can remember of turning the grindstone by hand for my dad to sharpen his scythe and the cutter bar for the horse-drawn mowing machine. Again, no electricity. again, the little farm that we had, every bit of hay that we could get was important. So we'd mow the roadsides, and part of it was to keep the roadsides clean, but also it was a hay crop. It was grass growing there. And so we'd save that and bring it in, have to bring that in, rake it up by hand and with a horse-drawn wagon, you know, load it on the wagon, bring it to the barn. And around streams, brooks, other fences on the farm, is where we'd mow by hand, where you couldn't go with a horse-drawn mowing machine. So yes, that's where I started on the hand mowing. Well, we boys would work out during the summertime, during school vacation, again, to kind of help a little bit with the family income. On a nice hay day, when we could work out in the fields, I can remember getting 75 cents a day. On days it was raining, we couldn't work outdoors, but we were there to do the chores and so on. 50 cents a day is what we got. Big money, you know. But when I got into high school, and I can remember one year in particular, going out of high school, I hadn't had an awful lot of physical exercise, you know, during the school year. Went to work on a neighboring farm. And the first day out was to go out hand mowing. And I was out hand mowing with the men. And where we were mowing is what we'd call a boggy area, a wet area. Couldn't go on it with even with a horse-drawn mowing machine. Well, I kind of felt I ought to keep up with the men, you know, mowing. Well, I don't know if I kept up with them or not, but I did mow all day long. And that was a pretty tired boy when it came night, I'll tell you that. You know, I kind of took a liking to hand mowing. And you mentioned whether that is how it developed that I got into the hand mowing event at Addison County Fair and Field Days. And I guess probably it is. I took a liking to it. And the use of hand mowing had diminished very much. It's kind of coming back a little bit, not on a commercial basis, but many homeowners now, people with smaller acreage, there's a little bit more of it going on. But I thought there was an old-time method of doing some farm work that really was done on a business basis, and it was disappearing. And I thought, well, why not? That seems to work in well at our field days as a sort of a demonstration thing, show people, you know, what used to be. So we got that started back in 1978 at field days, and it's still going strong. Well, interesting. It's a really good group of people that come in for hand mowing. And like you said, we've had people from Canada, from states fairly far away. And, you know, get to know these people. They enjoy it. It's fun. I enjoyed it. But after doing it for 30 years, and I'm not quite as young as I was at one time, in connection with the hand mowing event, I just thought there's some things that I ought to let someone else, you know, handle. And so I made the announcement a year ago. I told the people after the end of our event. I said, I know I won't be doing this forever. And what I'd like is someone to work with me, hopefully with the thought that they might, you know, carry on, take the leadership in it. Well, that was not very specific, as you well know. I had a few volunteers, you know, to help with this, that, and the other thing, but no one came forth. This last year, in 1969, I'm thinking back, you know, but 2009, at the end of our event, I said, now I'm going to need you people's help, because I said, this is my last year. I let that be known through news releases and my letters to the exhibitors, so they knew it was coming. I said, I'm going to need your help. I'm going to need someone to really take over the leadership of this event, because this is my last year. And thank God, a young lady stepped forward right after my comments, and there were two other people with her, and she said, the three of us have been talking about this, and we've decided we will handle that event. And what a relief. I felt good about it. And I think it's going to go well. Yeah, a year ago when I made that comment, there's a lady out of Burlington who her first time mower, but she was quite impressed, I guess, in what I said and with our event, how well it went. and so on. Nancy Reynolds is her name. And she said, I can't head it up because of my work and living in Burlington, but a thing I can do is put together, she called it a manual, of step by step of how you have organized each year, what you do. And I thought how helpful that would be. So many, many emails between the two of us, three visits from her here to me, to my place in Middlebury. And she put together step by step in a lot of detail how I started month by month, you know, what I would do. And then she picked up sample copies of a lot of the material that I had, either on the computer or hard copies. And she put this little booklet together, which these people now have. And I told them, I said, now that is a starting point. That's what I did. And I said, that doesn't mean it's what you're going to do, but it'll give you a place from which to go. And already they have sent a letter out to the email list that I had, which I passed on to them. And they've come up with some suggestions and for some changes right now in the classes that they would like to initiate for next year. And they're asking for feedback from the participants. I will plan to enter. There's a class that we started back 4 years ago. We call it the Roger Shattuck Memorial. Roger Shattuck was a gentleman from Lincoln who started mowing. He came up from New York City, lived in Lincoln, bought a place there, was interested in hand mowing. In fact, I worked with him and his son, sort of demonstration-wise, you know, in scything. He started mowing in 82, and he mowed right through until 4 years ago. I think it's 4 years ago. He said to me, would it be possible to have a class for people 80 years of age and over? And I said, well, I think it's a possibility. Well, poor Roger Shattuck passed away that December of the year that he mentioned that to me. So I told the family, I said, we will have a class, we'll call it the Roger Shattuck Memorial, 80 and over. And I said, I'm going to enter. Well, his wife said, can I enter? And I said, of course you can. It'll be open to anybody. She was just a little over 80. And Roger, I think, was 82 the year he died. So that first year, there was just Nora Shattuck, his wife, and me in that class. And who do you think won the class? His wife. Well, you know, by one point on the score. But, you know, in my heart, I had the feeling, you know, this is kind of a sentimental thing. And I really felt it. And it was competition. The judges judged us, just like they judged everybody else. In my heart, I really wanted her to win. Honestly, I did. I was pleased. But then the next year, there were three of us that entered. And that year, I came through and won the class. So I told Nora, I said, well, Nora, now we both got a blue ribbon and a plaque for this, which is a memorial class. It's very meaningful. Yeah, that was an enjoyable thing over those years. Of course, all of Field Days has been good. I started that in 1948. Well, I started Extension in 1940, and then I came to Addison County in 1946. By the way, Joe Kerrigan, and in this celebration of Extension, he's a pretty early guy. He was the first county Extension agent in Addison County. He was dean of the College of Agriculture when I was up in Grand Isle County. He's the one who asked me if I would come down when there was an opening in Addison County for a county agent position in agriculture, and I came down, and, well, fortunate or unfortunate, I did get the position. I came down here in February of 46, and I retired December of 82. And I started in August of 1940, right out of college. I graduated in the spring of 1940, went right up to Grand Isle County. Of course, the enrollment was, I don't remember what the enrollment was, but it was low. I was in the College of Agriculture. Again, I had to work because the family did not have financial support. It was a little difficult to get financial support in those days, but When I went in 36, I stayed out 1 year. I graduated from high school in 35. I stayed out 1 year. I enrolled the next year at UVM. And I did have a $100 Hood scholarship. But I needed some more assistance. And do you know who you went to in those days to make your application and plea for some financial help? You went directly to the top. Went to the president. Guy Bailey was president of UVM. Went right in his office. Now, there's a change at UVM. Dormitories were few and far between. I never lived in, I guess the, for men, I'm not exactly sure. But most of the students then found rooms off campus, and that's where I lived. The last year or two, UVM had a poultry plant down near Centennial Field, which was not being used. I rented that, and I had some birds down there, lived in the head house. I set up an egg delivery route in Middlebury, started growing capons. That was a little source of income. It was quite different. Working that way, having to work, my social life at UVM was at a pretty low level. I did have some work in the state extension office, and I can remember when I had a period of maybe 1 hour with no classes, whatever I was doing over there, I could just go over there and spend an hour working on that, come back to the next class, and I got 30 cents an hour. That was big money. I majored in agricultural science and education, and I had in mind the possibility of OAG teaching. But then I had started the poultry, my little poultry business. My older brother, who was a WAG teacher, had decided not to continue that, and he wanted to go in with me in the poultry business together and improve on the business that I had started. And I was given that consideration. Now, he was married, and I was single at the time, so I kind of had that in mind, that maybe I would start in with that. But Harris Soule, who was county agent leader, contacted me and said, there's an opening up in Grand Isle County for extension agent. We'd like to have you go up. And so I did that. And again, I got the job. And they told me right there, sometimes, you know, you're interviewed and you're notified later on. Well, I guess I went out of the room from where the people were discussing. But anyway, I got the position. And I've told this to many people. I really came home feeling about as low as a person would who didn't get the position, because there I had told my brother I would consider it. I had to tell him things had changed completely. But you know, in the long run, that was a good move that happened. He went on, he developed the poultry business, he developed Shadow Cross Farm, which is up there in Colchester now. His son is still operating that. I went on my extension career and came to Addison County, wonderful county, wonderful people to work with, a lot of fun. And extension has changed tremendously. I just don't know exactly how it operates today here in 2009. But during the years I worked, it was so enjoyable because of meeting so many people face to face. When I came to Addison County, there were more dairy farms in Addison County by double the number of dairy farms in Vermont today. So part of extension work, you know, was on a face-to-face basis, farm visits, office calls, telephone calls, things like that. But you see, that's what made it fun. And, of course, extension is education. And we use various forms of getting word out to people. One of the things that I enjoyed doing was morning radio broadcasts. And I'd do that right from home. Sometimes I'd go in the radio station, which was located right here in Middlebury, but that was an exceptionally good local radio station. And most of the time I did my broadcast by telephone from home. And that was between 6:30 and 7, about a 10 to 15 minute period. In those days, with all these farmers that I mentioned, most of them had radios in the barn. With their smaller dairies, they listened to that. You could get information out, educational information out in the morning. and they'd pick it up. I remember back in the 60s, we had 3 years in a row with a heavy drought here in Addison County.
Well, yeah.
The first year, they called it Operation Water Wagon. Well, of course, I kept close watch of that as things were developing. We were getting into the fall. Farmers' ponds had dried up. With this clay soil, that's how they stored the water for their livestock. They would dig these big ponds, fill it with water from streams or precipitation and so on. And their ponds were nearly empty. And it was a crucial situation. And we in Extension worked on that. We got word out. We did surveys, learned what the situation was, reached our state office, Soil Conservation Service, ACS, which was the Agricultural State Police and Service. All agencies were working together. It finally reached a level of where the National Guard became available to come down and help by hauling water into the farm ponds. And with the radio program, of course, we have news releases put out once a week. Newsletters would go out once a month and so on. But the radio, I'd be able to get word out. Farmers were listening, what was developing. And when it was decided that National Guard would come down and deliver some water, I was getting word of where they were going to go first. I could get that word out over radio, and the farmers would be listening because they knew what was up, see? And so it was very interesting when we learned they were coming and who would be the first one to get some water, because we knew people were itchy, farmers were itching and wanted it. Well, when I say we, it's the other agencies, we were all working together. It was decided there was a farmer out in Addison who was worked in a wheelchair. He had a small milking parlor, and he could get to his milking parlor and do his milking by wheelchair. And we thought, well, nobody would object if this guy got water first. And so that's what was decided. I went out when they came to deliver the water, and where they had to go was a little ways from the pond. Quite a few feet. There was a little ditch that led into the pond where water normally would go in. So they went to that place, and would you believe it? What they came with was one of the little field units that would handle about 250 gallons of water. They didn't really realize at that time how large the farm ponds were. Well, when they dumped that water in that ditch, with the distance it had to travel, very little water got into the pond. And that immediately let them know they'd have to do something different. And so they scurried around and found big tankers. They went way out west and picked some up. And that was quite an operation. And by Christmas time, now this was in the fall when this started, I almost think it was in September, their goal was to have farmers taken care of by Christmas time. And they did. But it was just about the day before that they finished up. And then we did get a January thaw, which is quite normal, doesn't happen every year. We did get a January thaw. We had had quite a little snow in the meantime. That helped replenish water in the ponds. And the farmers got through. But unfortunately, two more drought years followed. And the National Guard again came in. But then they went to piping water, using gasoline motors to vacuum the water and pump it into the ponds. And they went miles with their aluminum pipe to get to the creek or even Lake Champlain or ponds to find water. And they were able to service the farms that way. That started along, I believe, in the 40s. Well, that was a tremendous change for dairymen, bulk tanks. You know, they were shipping their milk in these small milk cans, you know, milk jugs, we call them. When they got the word that this was taking place, and then some of the milk companies that were handling the milk, some of them were going to the bulk tanks, and that's the way they were going to pick up milk. There was a little bit of a gradual changeover. They didn't do it overnight so that dairymen were not able to find a way of storing, cooling their milk and getting it picked up. But that was a big, big change. Number one, to buy that kind of equipment. Number two, the milk houses that many of them had before with water and maybe ice-cooled tanks, you know, for their cans of milk. Some of the milk houses were not large enough to put in the bulk tanks. This didn't mean just buying a big bulk tank. It meant, have you got a place to put it? And also have a place where the milk haulers can get there with their trucks and back up to the milk house and get the water, get the milk out of the big bulk tank. So it was a financial change for dairymen. It was a housing problem for many of them, many of them. As I say, farms were small in numbers, in size, in number of dairy animals. It's very possible that there were some. That one doesn't seem to register with me, that there was a large number of that happening. It was a big investment. Well, see, I saw Extension as, you know, it's an educational organization, and I saw it as one, I saw it as my job to do what I could to help people, and primarily agriculture, but we did have, you know, home calls and, you know, horticultural people and land lawns and stuff like that. But the commercial farmers, the ones basically that that we worked with, that I worked with in, as an agricultural agent, I saw my role as trying to help them to help themselves. And so the various methods that were available that I could use of imparting knowledge to them, information to them, is the way I saw it. That was one of the, well, one of the things in my mind when I started Field Days back in 1948. See, not long after the war, and many things were short and rationed during the wartime. Technology was being used for the war effort. Everybody, farm, home, and everybody were not the recipients of the technology, but that was beginning to come out. And it seemed like a prime time to do something where people could be, could see and could learn of some of the technology that was now coming out, things that were being available to them, becoming available to them. And that was the basic thought back of getting Field Days started. And we were trying to think of the whole family, not just the farm alone, the whole family. And that's why when we started it, we called it Addison County Farm and Home Field Days. The name's been changed a little bit now. It's called Addison Care, Addison County Fair and Field Days. They've kept Field Days in there because local people still use that word. They say, you know, are you going to Field Days and all that? And I'm kind of pleased of that. But there were about four things that we had in mind when we started the Field Days. And one, of doing as much educational as possible, giving the youth an opportunity, things for the family in general, so it wouldn't have to be just, you know, and heavy to agriculture, this being, you know, a prime agricultural area. And thank God, those four things are still prominent in Addison County Fair and Field Days today, which is what, 60, how many years?
61.
60, well, a little more than that now, in 48. You count 48 and you count,
okay,
you know.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, those objectives are still primary focuses of Addison County Fair and Field Days. I was not personally a 4-H member. When I went to Grand Isle County, I was the only agent there. And we did have 4-H, so I did the 4-H work. And I'm not sure if I started it up in Grand Isle County. I almost think I did, of having an annual event for 4-H. I don't know if you could call it Field Days, but it was an annual event of bringing young people together and having a program especially for the youth. So I was quite heavily involved in the youth work. Again, this was good Dean Kerrigan, bless his soul. I came to Addison County C in 46. UVM acquired the Morgan Horse Farm in 1951. Good Dean Kerrigan got hold of me and said, we'd like to have you go out to the Morgan Horse Farm as superintendent, and if you'll consider doing that, we will have another agent come to Addison County. That's when John Stevenson came. And you can both live out at the farm, 50-50, 50% on Extension, 50% connection with the farm. Well, I'm telling you, that was an educational experience. It was a good one. I've told some people the 50-50 turned out to be 100-100. Those were some pretty long days and pretty long weeks. come summertime, of course, our Morgan horses, you know, was the big thing at the Morgan Horse Farm. But we did have 500 head of sheep. We did bring in some Angus cattle, so we had an Angus herd. We boarded dairy heifers for the Hood Milk Company, kept them. They'd bring them up as young heifers. We'd have the breeding done up there, and just prior to their time to calve, the Hood Company would come up and truck them down to their farm in Beverly Hills, Mass. And then we did do some Birdsfoot trefoil work. We had a field, registered Mansfield Birdsfoot seed that we did on the farm. So it was kind of a busy time. And then I started to say, during the summertime, of course, with our Morgan horses, we'd go to the Morgan horse shows around the state, a little bit out of state. We'd always go to the National down in Northampton, Mass. Most of the horse shows would be on weekends or holidays, and I'd always go with our horseman to every one of the horse shows. In fact, I guess I drove the truck for him. We'd take maybe 5 horses to the shows. That would make for some long days and some long weeks. It was enjoyable. We had 5 children when we went out to the Morgan Horse Farm. 8 years later, I was out there for 8 years. 8 years later, we moved back to Middlebury, and we had 11 children. And then we had one more after we moved back into Middlebury. So we ended up with a family of 12. I don't know why. I always wanted a dozen, and I got a dozen. Another thing, I don't know why, I always had twins. Thank the good Lord, I guess we didn't get twins. But we had a nice family. We've got a good family. And even today, we're so fortunate with 12 children, all living, no serious health problems. Very, very fortunate. Well, see, I've been with that now. Come this coming year, someone else has taken over the leadership of the Hanmoyn. It'll be the first year since 48 that I will not have a direct responsibility with field days. So that's a little bit of a long stretch with one particular event, which I got started and I'm very proud of, because it's going well. There's been a great sense of support for that. This is a tremendously cooperative, helpful, interested area here in Addison County. It's been one of the good ones. Of course, I was only in Grand Isle County for 5 years, so I don't have a lot to compare, but this has been a very, very interesting and good and cooperative area in which to work. Well, that's a hard one to answer, and not being as close to it as I used to, my basis for a comment may not be as well-founded as it could be, but I've always been optimistic about the dairy industry in Vermont. This is troubling today. I'm not close to it to know all the details, but I do talk with some of the people connected, some of the service people. In fact, I've just been visiting with someone just very recently. And currently, economically, financially, it's a very difficult situation. Something has got to change, or there'll be some major change. There have been quite a few farms lost in Vermont just in the recent months, in the last few years. Many, I don't know about all of the farmers because I'm not that close to it, but many of them have had to borrow money just to meet expenses. The fixed cost of producing milk has been greater than the return on milk, the price they get for milk. It's a difficult, difficult situation. I don't know the answer. There's quite a lot going on now. I read in the papers and on the news. I try to keep somewhat informed, but I don't know the details, as you might expect. I'm still kind of optimistic. I'm very optimistic. I'm hopeful that dairy can remain viable in Vermont. It certainly would change the landscape of Vermont if dairy could not continue. It would change the landscape tremendously. It would. And with the loss of farms over time in numbers, the remaining ones, by and large, are larger, with a larger number of animals. So they're using more acres. So some of the smaller ones that have gone out of business, the acreage, the land, has been used by the ones who have continued. So the landscape has kept quite well. There are areas, well, here in Addison County, our Addison County goes over the mountain here with Hancock and Granville. And when I first came, there were several dairy farms in those two towns. I know there's very few over there now. I'm not sure, but very, very few. But the Champlain Valley is still prime agricultural land. And hopefully, I'm optimistic. Well, I've kept busy, thank God. I've kept busy. Like I say, I've stayed involved with the field days, you know, right up. Now I will not have a responsible position. I'll be a civilian now. I can enjoy it maybe as a spectator and so on, which I've done in the past also. I've maintained my connection with other activities, the church, St. Mary's School, very active in Right to Life with Addison County in Vermont, hold some offices in those organizations, the Knights of Columbus. Really what I've told people, some folks say, similar to what you have just said, and I said, the good Lord has been good to me. And of course, I really do believe that. But folks wonder, well, what have you done physically or otherwise may contribute to, because my health is basically good, thank God for that. I don't purposely do things very differently that I know of. I do keep physically active. I don't know if you could say that I try to follow a very strict diet. It's variable, though, quite nutritious. It could be genes in the family. My mother lived to 99. However, my dad passed away at 77. My youngest son lived at home. He didn't marry until a little bit later on. He lived at home, and he helped my dad on the dairy farm, and he set up a poultry business. He developed a poultry business, a pretty good sizable one. As a matter of fact, he's still living on the home farm now up there in Crossbury. But my dad was a dairy farmer. It turned out very good, I would say, and as I mentioned, it was enjoyable work. I like people. Basically, I like people, and that is something, an extension that you're in contact with people a lot. It was an enjoyable experience. And I can't think of anything else. No. How do I know what it would be if I was starting all over again now? Things are quite different, you know, right here in Vermont from what they were when I first started.
Sure.
Well, yes, I didn't know very much about it. It was a huge piece of equipment. It took one whole big room up there. I think the last year I was in Extension, which was in 82, I think we had a computer in our office for a little while as a demonstration thing, and we didn't get to use it very much. There may have been something that held it up. But in Extension work, while I was working, I never personally got to the point of using a computer. Now, I have one here at home now. I wouldn't say that I use it an awful lot, but in connection with my hand-mowing event at Field Days, I use it a lot there. All of my classes, my emails for the contact of the people that I would contact, I would do news releases, which I do from the computer and send them to the newspapers by email. I use it quite a lot. I use it in connection with the other organizations that I'm involved with. I'd miss it. I know I could use it a lot more than I do if I was a little more knowledgeable with it, the basic things that I need to do. Extremely helpful. Farm accounting and income taxes. And when I went to work in Grand Isle County, that was in 1940, farmers were just beginning to have to file income tax returns. They had not, they did not have the income to do it before. So as an educational event, Extension was working on the matter of income tax filing. Well, I think we used to be called Extension Service. And we used that word service pretty well with the income tax work that we started on. Because not only were we trying to inform farmers about it and what have you, but we actually were helping. I was going to say helping them, but I think you might say we were doing income tax returns for farmers. They were coming in our office. They didn't know where to go. Some of them would, now this is an honest truth. Some of them would come in with a shoebox with receipts and so on for the year. They were not keeping records. Well, now you can just imagine working with that. So you see, number one, we did. We sat down with the farmers. We did the writing on the tax forms. It was just all foreign material to them, completely foreign. So we started doing that. But then, with the shoebox deal, we began encouraging farmers to keep records. And of course, the Extension Service had farm account books. Maybe they still do, I don't know, do they? But then we got into electronic farm accounting, ELFAC, which was tremendous. Not everybody got on that. So, you see, educationally wise, we got Dermot to keep in records. Then when I came to Addison County, we continued doing that, though we soon got out of the business of actually filling out the forms. There were additional people that came in on a business basis to help, you know, do tax returns. So we started, maybe it was done around the state, but I know Addison County, I started doing income tax schools. And farmers started coming in, and there were some people other than farmers. In fact, some of the accountants came in to get some of the knowledge on the farm aspect of tax reporting. Good Verl Hogeboom was one of the individuals back in the earlier days who would come every year. Very knowledgeable fellow. He spent a lot of time. As a matter of fact, Verl helped some at the national level, really, with the tax forms for IRS. Yeah. So Extension really, you know, it goes in a lot of directions. But that was one I had mentioned because I thought that was an area where starting with something that Dermot, it was at a point where they had to do it, had not done it. Educationally, we helped them. Service-wise, we helped them for quite a period of time, but many of them then got on their own. Businesses came in or individual people came in to do tax returns so that we weren't physically doing them anymore, and we did the tax schools, got them to keep in good records. Those records were some, those ELFAC records were some that I used to use quite frequently in my economic work with Dermot and counseling them on budgeting and stuff like that. And pull out these ELFAC records, which were summarized to see what was happening on different farms. And there you could find those, you know, from the lower level to the upper level. And you could kind of pick out some of the things that could be helpful in teaching for management practices and so on. The same with DHIA, Deer Herd Improvement Association. I was very active in that. We had, I think, 9 different local associations here in Addison County with 9 different supervisors who were visiting farms, you know, every month, getting milk samples, getting those tested. And there again, we were getting information. I use that a lot in working with Dermot to look at the DHIA records on the level of production, the feeding programs, nutrition programs. A good basis for working on that. And, of course, we had specialists. We had good specialists out of UVM. And it got a lot of good literature. Of course, we had a lot of literature from USDA. There was a good resource of background information. At one time, going back to the income tax thing, before electronic filing became even possible, we were one of the better sources in Addison County for income tax forms. I used to have a pretty good list. That's when we could get them up at the IRS in Burlington. We'd place an order in. I'd go up there and I'd come back with a huge big box. And we had a display rack in the entrance to our extension office. People just learned that that was a place to come and get their tax forms. Now, I don't know how educational it was, but we were making things available to them. So many different facets like that is what made extension, you know, it was diverse. It was interesting. Face-to-face with people. Hopefully we were able to help them. That, like I said earlier, that was the way I saw extension, the basis to be able to help people to help themselves.